VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Alice Bryant and Brian Lynn. Later, Kelly Jean Kelly will present America's Presidents. But first, here is Alice Bryant.
For many people involved in theater, the past year has been difficult. For others, coronavirus closures have provided new opportunities using technology. Britain's Royal Shakespeare Company is one example. Even before COVID-19 restrictions closed theaters, the company had shared recorded performances as movies. This helped people who could not get to London or New York City to see the live shows. The pandemic has turned even the smallest theaters into producers of streamed programs. These are available on the internet outside of their local communities. For some theater lovers, a screen cannot replace a live performance. But some observers predict that online theater is here to stay. And a generation that has grown up with computers and mobile phones might like it better than live theater. The Royal Shakespeare Company, or RSC, has said it is combining online media skills with traditional art. Mixed reality productions let actors work with digital versions of 16th century writer William Shakespeare's more unusual characters. And digital events have invited people worldwide to add to the action from their computers. Sarah Ellis is Director of Digital Development at the RSC. She told Reuters News Agency that the company is doing its research and development right now. If we look at what the pandemic did, it broke open the future, she said. Ellis noted that digital tools have helped reach a lot of people around the world, and this creates many possibilities. Public opinion research by the RSC during the coronavirus health crisis found that people were willing to pay for digital performances. And people said they were willing to watch the shows online even when theaters reopened. Theaters work hard to bring to life the tension of a story on stage. That used to mean employing costly technical crews. But a few months before the pandemic brought restrictions, a valuable piece of equipment became available. The device is known as a switcher. One switcher causing excitement right now is the ATEM Mini. It costs just $295. This switcher is produced by Blackmagic Design, an Australian company that has worked with the RSC. Blackmagic has also provided technology for the movie Avatar and the series Game of Thrones. The device lets a video recording switch between up to four different cameras. That means a single performance can have the many different camera angles seen in movies and television shows. It also permits quick editing, so performances can be shared quickly online. Blackmagic founder Grant Petty said he wanted to help creative people by providing easy-to-use technology. He said when he first got into the industry, business people were controlling everything. Creative people were being excluded from decision-making. I just felt that was wrong, he said, adding, if the equipment was less costly, it would empower creative people. Theater Charlotte is a small theater that has used the switcher. It has streamed shows to people across the United States and Canada. It is North Carolina's longest continually producing community theater. But a fire last year damaged its 80-year-old headquarters. Acting Executive Director Chris Timmons said the company has rediscovered that theater is more than just a building. He expects to keep streaming even after Theater Charlotte rebuilds next year. And he said he can imagine a younger generation less interested in the traditions of pre-performance dinners and after-show drinks. Timmons said there is surely room for both kinds of crowds. Colvin Theater is a theater production group based in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Founder Cody Colvin says many productions lose money even when the economy is good, and streaming can help that. I'm Alice Bryant.
The U.S. Space Agency, NASA, is reporting new progress on Mars for its experimental helicopter and Perseverance Explorer. The helicopter, called Ingenuity, completed its ninth flight on the Red Planet on July 5th. NASA described the flight as the most successful so far. This is because Ingenuity broke several new records for length of flight, speed, and distance. The helicopter's movements are controlled by a team operating from NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory in California. The team said in the ninth flight, Ingenuity traveled for the first time across what it described as unfriendly terrain. The previous flights involved shorter trips over mostly flat terrain. The helicopter is working together with NASA's Perseverance Explorer, or rover. Currently, both are in an area of Mars known as Seta. The area contains rocks, sandy hills, and craters. This kind of terrain can present challenges for Ingenuity, raising the possibility the aircraft could crash during flight or upon landing. The team says one reason for this is that Ingenuity was built to guide itself with an algorithm designed to fly it across mainly flat ground. The main goal of the Ingenuity experiment was to demonstrate that a helicopter could successfully take off, fly, and land on Mars. The aircraft was not built to perform detailed searches and other complex operations. But since Ingenuity has progressed so well in previous tests, NASA controllers decided to push its limits even further. The team described the latest flight as a nail-biter. But in the end, it reported Ingenuity was alive and well after completing a trip of 625 meters through challenging terrain. The flight lasted 2 minutes and 46 seconds. The aircraft reached a speed of 5 meters per second. As it flies, Ingenuity captures detailed images of the surface of Mars. NASA says the helicopter's ninth flight was designed to provide the first close view of major science targets that Perseverance will not reach for quite some time. The latest images will be studied by the Perseverance team, which will then decide which areas may be most valuable for the rover to visit. Ingenuity is supporting Perseverance's goal to collect Martian soil and rocks to help scientists search for signs of ancient life on the planet. NASA also recently announced that Perseverance has started using an improved self-navigation system as it expands its exploration activities across Mars. So far, the rover's team at JPL has been planning the navigation paths and sending the travel instructions to Perseverance. But now, NASA says the rover will increasingly take charge of the drive by itself, using a powerful auto-navigation system. The system, called AutoNav, first creates a three-dimensional, or 3D, map of the terrain ahead. It then identifies any objects in the path and maps the best way to avoid them. JPL controllers say AutoNav can complete this process without any additional direction from them. Vandy Verma is a senior engineer, rover planner, and driver at JPL. She said in a statement, "The system gives the rover the ability to think while driving." She added, "The rover is thinking about the autonomous drive while its wheels are turning." NASA says that ability, combined with other improvements, might enable Perseverance to hit a top speed of 120 meters per hour. Another NASA rover on Mars, Curiosity, is equipped with an earlier version of AutoNav. On average, it moves about 30 meters per hour. I'm Brian Lynn.
VOA Learning English presents America's Presidents. Today we are talking about Lyndon Johnson. He was the vice president under John F. Kennedy. Many Americans recognize Johnson from a photograph of his swearing in on November 22, 1963. Kennedy had just been shot during a visit to Dallas, Texas. Johnson and his wife also were visiting the city. After doctors announced that Kennedy had died, the Johnsons were taken to the presidential airplane. There, Johnson took the oath of office as president. Men wearing suits look on, while three women stand around him. His wife, Lady Bird Johnson, is at one side. Former First Lady Jackie Kennedy is at the other. She is still wearing clothing covered with her husband's blood. The judge who is administering the oath, Sarah Hughes, stands in front of Lyndon Johnson. She holds a prayer book on which Johnson places one hand and swears to follow the Constitution. The photograph showed the American people that the federal government could and would continue in an orderly way. But Johnson's position was difficult. Many people were shocked and in mourning for the assassinated president. Johnson promised to continue many of Kennedy's reforms. He went on to use the public sympathy for Kennedy to pass additional legislation, especially in the area of civil rights. In the next election, Johnson was elected president in his own right. But as the conflict in Vietnam increased and some Americans rejected Johnson's reforms, he found his position difficult again. Lyndon Baines Johnson was born in Texas, where his family had lived for generations. A town called Johnson was even named after his relatives. Lyndon was the oldest of five children. His mother was a teacher and writer, and his father was a farmer and political leader. In time, the Johnson family experienced financial difficulties. They had little money to give their children much of an education, but Lyndon was able to attend a teaching college. Johnson excelled as a teacher. He also learned from his students. Many were even poorer than he was. They also faced discrimination because they came from Mexican families. Johnson promised to help them. But he found he could do more to improve people's lives as a politician than as a teacher. He volunteered for some political campaigns, became an aide to a member of the United States Congress, and in time became a member of Congress himself. Along the way, he married a woman named Claudia Taylor, but everyone called her Lady Bird. They went on to have two daughters. Johnson served for 12 years in the U.S. House of Representatives. In 1948, he was narrowly elected to the Senate, becoming one of the two senators from the state of Texas. From there, Johnson rose quickly. He took on increasingly important jobs in the Senate. By 1954, he was the Senate Majority Leader, the Democratic Party's top spokesman in the Senate. The Senate website notes that the person with that job needs to be able to work well with others, especially members of other parties. Historians also note that Johnson worked very hard and was always prepared. A well-known biography of Johnson is called Master of the Senate. The book describes Johnson as extremely ambitious, sometimes cruel, and often willing to praise others to get what he wanted. At the same time, he could be very concerned about other people's well-being. In other words, the picture of Johnson is a complicated one. In 1960, he competed against John F. Kennedy for the Democratic presidential nomination. Johnson lost that race, but the party asked him to be their vice presidential candidate instead. Johnson agreed, not knowing that in a little more than 3 years, he would enter the White House as president. After being sworn in, Johnson used his political experience in the Senate to pass a number of reforms. They were aimed at carrying on, in his words, a war on poverty. The new laws created health care and education programs. They also used federal money to make food less costly for some people and to train workers for jobs. Johnson also continued the work Kennedy began by signing the Civil Rights Act of 1964. The act made segregation because of race, religion, or national origin illegal. The Civil Rights Act also made it illegal for employers to discriminate against someone because of race, religion, national origin, or gender. The reforms had their critics, then and today. But in the presidential election of 1964, Johnson won by the widest margin of popular votes in American history. Historian Kent Germany says that vote gave the Democrats a rare opening to pass a comprehensive liberal program. Johnson had a name for such a program. He called it the Great Society. He said, "The United States should aim not only to be a rich and powerful society, but also to end poverty and racial injustice." Johnson followed his earlier reforms with others. They sought to prevent crime, reduce pollution, support the arts, make roads safer, and protect American consumers against bad products. His administration also created an immigration policy that valued family members, skilled workers, and refugees. Johnson also signed the Voting Rights Act of 1965. It sought to lift the barriers that had long prevented African American men and women from exercising their right to vote. Later, Johnson removed legal discrimination in the process of buying and renting homes. Together, these actions have linked Johnson to the civil rights movement in the minds of many Americans. Yet, Johnson is also strongly linked to another part of U.S. history, often known simply as Vietnam. Earlier presidents had ordered U.S. military action in the conflict between North and South Vietnam. Since 1950, Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy had slowly increased the American intervention. Their goal was to prevent the spread of communism in Southeast Asia. President Johnson continued Kennedy's policies. He also received the support of Congress to do whatever was necessary to protect U.S. forces and prevent further aggression by North Vietnam's communist government. Yet, when he was a presidential candidate in 1964, Johnson promised not to increase U.S. involvement and send young Americans to fight in Vietnam. The opposite happened. Over the next 4 years, Johnson called on hundreds of thousands of additional U.S. troops to fight on the ground and in the air. The North Vietnamese fought back, both on the battlefield and politically. In time, the American public withdrew their support of the struggle and their support for the president. By early 1968, Johnson had become deeply unpopular with voters. His party lost seats in Congress, and Johnson lost his ability to persuade lawmakers to support the measures he proposed. In addition, the U.S. economy was showing signs of weakness, partly because of the costs of the conflict in Vietnam and government spending at home. As the presidential nominating process began in early 1968, Johnson was permitted to seek another four-year term, but he announced that he would not seek or accept his party's nomination. Shortly after, civil rights leader Martin Luther King Jr. was shot and killed. Angered by his murder, people in more than 100 cities rioted. Then, in June, John Kennedy's brother, Robert Kennedy, was also assassinated. Kennedy had been competing for the Democrats' nomination for president. His death and Johnson's withdrawal added to the divisions in the Democratic Party. Several groups gathered to protest at the party's nominating convention in Chicago. The meeting ended in violent clashes between protesters and police. By the time Johnson left office in January 1969, his party had lost control of the White House, and many Americans believed the country was in disarray. After he left the presidency, Johnson returned to his home in Texas. He wrote his memories about his White House years and made preparations for his presidential library. But he did not live much longer. He died in 1973, hours before the U.S. involvement in Vietnam officially came to a close. Johnson was a complex person, and his image in the mind of many Americans is just as complicated. His policies opened new paths for many people, but also led to years of death and destruction in Vietnam. As a president, he acted powerfully and often independently, and succeeded in passing an unusually large number of reforms. But he also failed to persuade many Americans to accept some of those measures. Supporters of the free market especially strongly rejected the government controls Johnson enacted. Even some in his Democratic Party, which Johnson had controlled for years, lost faith in him. In 1964, anti-war activists changed his campaign slogan, "All the Way with LBJ." Instead, they said, "Part of the Way with LBJ." And by 1968, they were saying, "Hey, hey, LBJ, how many kids did you kill today?" I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.